Here we are in our outline of the book of Deuteronomy. We are in the last section, which has, as Wiersbe puts it, Moses looks up. This is the beginning of the fourth sermon, and there may be some question in your mind as we at the beginning of Deuteronomy raise this question: are there three or four sermons? And typically, no one disagrees with chapters 1 to 4. Let's back up just a moment. 1 to 4 being the first sermon, and 5 to 26 being the second, and 27 to 30 being the third. Some would group 27 to 34 together, but I think generally the idea of their three sermons are those are the three sermons. We finished that. This is kind of an addendum to the book. I think Moses is still teaching here, and we're going to give some evidence of that. I think he's still... They're never called sermons. We call them sermons, but he's proclaiming the message of God on the eve of their crossing into the land of Canaan. And so call them what you wish. There seems to me to be four sermons. He's still doing some teaching here. And we'll give some evidence of that, I think, as we go along. So here's as Wiersbe outlines that. Chapter 31 focuses on a new leader. Chapter 32, a new song. Chapter 33, a new blessing. In chapter 34, a new home. They're headed to a new home, and so is Moses. And so I might word that a little different, but that's a little unique as per Wiersbe style. And so this is where we are, the new leader and the new song. All right, let's review our chapters of where we have been. Chapter 1 begins the first sermon by doing what? Yeah, review from Sinai to Kadesh. Chapter 2. Wilderness wanderings and victory over Sihon, chapter 2-3. Victory over Og and Moses forbidden to enter. That's interesting. That's early in the book, and now we have that happening in this last section. Chapter 4, to finish that first sermon. Obedience. That's the thrust of the entire book. All right, chapter 5 begins the second sermon on the note of Ten Commandments and how the people fear God. Chapter 6 gives a broader view of the law. Chapter 7, they are a separate people. Chapter 8 comes back and emphasizes keeping the commandments. Chapter 9 talks about how that they didn't do this on their own. I'll review some of these in interest of time. Chapter 10, mercy and obedience. See the obedience again. This is a common theme. Chapter 11, they are to love and obey the Lord. Here we are again. And then chapter 12 stands out because it is the refers to the place that the Lord chooses. That at some point will be Shiloh, another time it'll be Jerusalem. So that's the worshiping as God directs. Chapter 13 deals with idolatry. Chapter 14 deals with clean and unclean animals. Chapter 15 comes to play tonight. 7-year release. We'll talk about that a little bit. So we'll flag chapter 15 in our study tonight. Chapter 16 deals with annual feast. 17, sacrifices and idolaters. Let's skip on down to chapter 20. Rules of warfare. They're about to embark upon warfare as they enter into the land of Canaan. Chapter 21. So is chapter 22. Chapter 23 deals with purity. Chapter 24 stands out because deals with divorce. Chapter 25. Miscellaneous laws primarily focusing on fairness. Chapter 26. Ceremonial obligations. And then chapter 27, covenant renewal. This begins the third sermon now. And so here's the covenant renewal. Chapter 28 dealt with blessings and curses. Chapter 29, the renewing of the covenant, similar to chapter 27. And since that chapter mentions they're going astray, will go astray, chapter 30. All right, that's the end of the third sermon. Now we're ready for chapter 31. I mention here 31 to 33 primarily being the sermon. If you get ahead of yourself, let's jump on over to chapter 34. And we're going to see some comments about Moses dying. Moses dies on Mount Nebo. That would not be part of the sermon or any of the teaching that Moses did. So in this slide here is what is the point of the fourth sermon? What's the point here? That's going to carry us from chapter 31 to 33. Couple of points to make about that. First, let's talk about the thrust and the point of this sermon, our miscellaneous teaching. This may not be in one setting, and I doubt that 31 to 33 was all at one setting, but be that as it may, he seems to focus on two things, a new leader and future challenges. By future challenges, he means what? Or we mean? You're going into the new land, and you're going to be faced with challenges. You're going to have it better than you've ever had it before, and you're going to be tempted to turn to idols, and you will turn to idols, and you're going to go astray, and you're going to think God's forgotten about you, but then if you repent, you come back. Make sense? Here are new challenges. So we have a new leader, and there's going to be new challenges, some of which Moses is not going to help them with and can help them with, as we see in verse 1 and 2 in just a moment. Does that make sense? All right, some of the sections here, some think starts at verse 31, chapter 31. Others think it starts perhaps at chapter 34, that Moses is the author of the book, but Moses could not have written chapter 34. So someone picked the book up and finished the writing of the history, obviously. Who was that? Probably Joshua, but we don't know. We're not told. But writing about the death of Moses and how that he died and what happened with him, he could not have written. But that would have been written after his death. So, but we still credit Moses with the book because he is the author of the book. Now, there were things that, there are other sections of the Bible where someone writes off in their own hand toward the end, and we'll talk about that at other times. All right, questions or comments on chapter, where we're going? What's chapter 31? Question number one for tonight. All right, Moses' farewell. Now, this is interesting to me, that this is Moses' farewell speech. He's been speaking for a period of about 30 days, and he's come to the end, and this is his farewell speech, starting in chapter 31. Again, this might not have been all spoken at the same setting. He may have spoke, something happens, and then he speaks a little bit later. I'm going to put it as if it's all in one. But this is Moses' farewell speech. And it's interesting the content of his farewell speech. He's directed by God, I recognize, but what he put in that speech. Joshua had a farewell speech, Joshua 23 and 24. Paul had a farewell speech, Acts chapter 20, 17 to 37. If you had a farewell speech, you say, well, I'm not a leader like Moses. No, but you are a leader of someone somewhere. You may be more influential in the local church than you think. You may be influential in the community. You may be influential in your family. It may just be two or three other people that you are the leader of, but you are a leader, and if you gave a farewell speech, what would you say? That's interesting, isn't it? This was the last one. Last time you have an opportunity to influence, what would you say? Something to think about. And so here we have the farewell speech of Moses. All right, here's the first thing that he says. Do not be afraid. God is going with you. Let's work through that. Do not be afraid. God is going with you. How old is Moses? Question two. 120 years old. So Moses spoke these words to Israel. He said, I'm 120 years old today, and I can no longer go out and come in. Well, there's two things, and in addition to that, whatever that means, we'll talk about what that means, the Lord's not going to let him go over into Jordan. So not able to come in and go out doesn't refer to the fact the Lord has forbidden him. That's in addition to this. So some have suggested he's getting too old and getting quite frail. Let's go to chapter 34 and verse 7. I want us to be careful in what we say there about him. Moses was 120 years old when he died. His eyes were not dim, nor his natural vigor abated. Hadn't lost a whole lot of strength. So So when Moses is saying, I can no longer go in and come out, I don't think he is saying, I'm old and frail and I can't function anymore. Chapter 34 says that wasn't the case. In fact, chapter 34 is telling him he's quite spry for his age. I take it that what it means is he's too old to fight the battles and the wars. And even if I were going across, I'm too old to fight the battles and to conquer the land. And even if he were going, there would be a need for a new leader. And so is he just wore out and frail? Well, he still seems to be in pretty good shape for 120 years old, chapter 34 tells us. And the reason he died wasn't because he just got old and wore out. He died because the Lord forbid him to go into the land. The Lord said, now it's time for you to die. Go on the mountain, you're going to die. Or it caused him to die. All right. So Moses said, I'm not going to go across over into Jordan. Now verse 2 goes on to say, that was also because, mainly because, God had told him, you can't do that. You're not going to go. And that was because he had, he struck the rock instead of speaking to the rock as God had so instructed. Let's look at verses 3 to 6. Here's the thrust of his message in this sermon. And that is, God's going with you, and Joshua's going to go with you, and God's going to be with Joshua. That's his point. So verses 3 to 6. That the Lord himself crosses over before you. This is a tone that he's emphasized again and again throughout all of these sermons. The Lord is the one who does this, and he will go and he will destroy the nations that you will dispossess. And Joshua is going over. You'll say more about Joshua in a moment. But he's going to go before you, and God's going to do with those kings and those leaders just like he did with who? Sihon and Og, and he'll destroy them. And the Lord will give them over to you, and you'll do to them according to every commandment. So in other words, not mentioned here, but the Lord's telling them, you're going to go in, you're going to kill, and you're going to destroy. You're not going to compromise. And you're not going to have, you're not going to spare man, woman, or child. You're going to go in and completely, utterly destroy them. And so you go in and do that. Now what's the point of verse 6? Therefore, be strong and courageous. Yes. Be strong and of good courage. And do not fear, nor be afraid of them. So this idea of going in and fighting and standing in fear and trembling, I don't know if we can do this or not. Be strong, be courageous. We can do what the Lord wants us to do. God said we could conquer. I know we can conquer. We're confident we can do that because the Lord is with us. And notice he ends that saying, God will never leave nor forsake you. Now, what we're going to see in the tenor of the rest of the sermon is that they will forsake the Lord, but the Lord will never forsake them. As long as you stand with the Lord, the Lord's always going to be with you. So you go in and fight, the Lord's going to be with you. The Lord will never leave you nor forsake you. Where is that quoted in the New Testament? It's not in a context of fighting, interesting enough. Hebrews chapter 13 and 5 in the context of being content, isn't it? Remembering the Lord said, I'll never leave you nor forsake you. Be content because the Lord has told you he'll never leave you nor forsake you. He quotes this verse right here. So be strong and courageous. All right, now let's get 7 and 8. Moses told Joshua, brings him forth. He's the new leader. And he said in the sight of all of Israel. So while he's speaking to Joshua, he's saying it not only for Joshua's benefit, but for Israel's benefit, that he's saying that you need to be strong and courageous, for you must go with this people as the Lord is to the land that God swore to them that they will inherit it. And the Lord, he is the one that goes before you. And he says to him the same thing he said to Israel, the Lord will not leave you nor forsake you, so do not fear or be dismayed. There's no reason to fear. God's given his promise. You can conquer the land. You are the leader. They are your followers. You get ready to go. So here's the point. Don't be afraid. God's going to be with you. Make sense? Now let's look at question number 10. And let's stick with verses 1 to 8. Anything practical in verses 1 to 8 you take with you and you say, that's good stuff. I can take that home with me. There's no need to fear if I know God's with me. I know God's with me if I'm doing what he said. God said, go conquer the land. If you go conquer the land, God said, fight. If you're fighting, if God said, destroy them, if I'm doing what God said, then I know the Lord's with me. Now, God didn't tell me to go fight that kind of battle, but God told me to be faithful. God told me to love my family. God told me to forgive others. God told me to worship faithfully, on and on and on and on. If I'm doing what the Lord said, then I know God's with me. All right, do not fear. Good point. There's no need to fear. No need to fear knowing the Lord is with us. Absolutely. Good point. Do you notice that in verse 2, the consequence of sin goes a long way? Even a consequence of a sin you committed one time. To my knowledge, Moses struck the rock one time. It wasn't like he did this 10, 15 different occasions. One time he struck the rock and God said, because you did that, you're not entering the land. He's 120 years old. God hadn't forgotten that. And so consequences of sin goes a long way. Even a consequence of a sin I committed one time may go a long way. May go a long way. It did with Moses. Powerful point. What else would you list? Practical, you take home with you. All right. All right, good point. Let's go to 9 to 13. The law is to be read every 7 years. Now, this is new ground for us. Not in totality, but there's some aspects of this that is new ground that Moses is mentioning here. We've already seen the law is to be read. We understood that from previous texts. We'll not trace. So Moses wrote this law and delivered it to the priest. I'm starting at verse 9. And who bore the Ark of the Covenant. And Moses commanded them, saying, at the end of every 7 years, at the appointed time of the year of release. Where do we learn about the year of release? Chapter. We said we had flagged this one as we came through it. It wasn't 14, and it wasn't 16. 15. Yeah, chapter 15 is the year of release. Make sense? So when that rolls around at the... what feast? The Feast of Booths or the Feast of the Tabernacles right here, which is in the month of Tishri, which would be our late September. So it's in the fall, and that's when that feast would come around. And then when all Israel comes and appears at the place which the Lord chooses, we learned about that in chapter... we learned about that in chapter 12. All right, chapter 12, the place where the Lord chooses. And when you gather there, then they will read the law. And what does that mean? The simple answer is, I'm not completely sure. I don't take it, though it may be possible, that that meant the reading of the entire law in one setting. Maybe it was. Some writers have suggested a reference to Acts 13, verse 15, and verse 27, for what that's worth, where they would read Moses and the prophets. That didn't mean they were reading the entirety of Moses or the entirety of the prophets. They're reading from Moses and reading from the prophets. Is that what those references would suggest? So was the entire law read every 7 years? Maybe. Maybe that's what the point was. I don't know. That doesn't mean also that this law wasn't read at other times. It was. There was the reading of the law on other occasions. But every 7 years, there would be this reminder to them, and that would become a witness to them. We'll say more about the witness in just a few moments. Does that make sense? So one of the things that's being accomplished, they're going to get this reminder at this holy assembly of the law, and here's the details of the law. But that's not the only time. Now, at verse 12 and 13 now, the reading of the law is going to accomplish something. What does it accomplish? Gather the people together, all the little ones, children, etc., that they may hear, and what are they going to do? Learn to fear. So what's that going to mean?
to be careful to observe all the law. Let's go to question number nine. Is there anything in these chapters that we learn about the fear of God? That's one of the things we've been flagging throughout, and hopefully you've kept up with that. If not, then do a search of the word on your Bible app sometime or Bible program, or Google that, and you'll find all the references to fear is directed toward God, and flag those. Those are very helpful. So what do we learn about fear in answer to that question in this chapter? All right. Good point. We fear God from the reading of the Word. So look at number three on the screen. Fear is learned by reading or hearing the Word. Show me somebody that doesn't really fear God. They're either not reading and they're not listening to the Word. You read the Word of God and you listen to the Word of God, that will instill fear in your hearts. Now, one of the ways that's done, chapter 32, we're going to see, is understanding the greatness of God. Once you learn that, you have the fear of God. More about that in a moment. All right, what else do we learn from this context about fear? Fear has to be taught, and fear has to be learned. We don't just soak up fear by osmosis somehow. We don't just associate with people who fear God, and now I fear God. Are raised, quote, in the church, or go to church, and therefore you fear God. You have to be taught to fear. If your children are going to walk in the fear of God, you have to teach them to fear God. If your grandchildren walk in the fear of God, you need to teach them to fear God. It's a foundation. Good point. It's the foundation principle. Everything moves off of that. So it has to be learned, it has to be taught, and it means, according to verse 12, that you then will carefully obey all the words of the law. Now, later on, we're going to say, even in these chapters, they're not going to obey God. That means they're going to lose their fear of God. What that means. Make sense? All right. Now then, that gets us down through verse 13. Starting at verse 14, this is about a new leader, a warning, and a song. So let's see what this is all about. First of all, there's Joshua, the new leader, verses 14 and 15. What do you see in 14 and 15 about Joshua? He's going to be the new leader. Now, notice the transition wording here at verse 14. Then the Lord said to Moses. And so is this part of the speech? I don't take it that this is all a part of the speech, but let's get ahead of ourselves down to verse 28. Verse 28 tells me, and without reading the verse, we'll come to that in a moment, that the things that were said to Moses, Moses seems to repeat back to the people. So at some point, this becomes part of his speech. Does that make sense? So let's see what God said. God told him, call Joshua and bring him to the tabernacle meeting that I might inaugurate him. In other words, that I might appoint him, or as your footnote would say, commission him. So that I might appoint him as a leader. So Moses did that. What happens at verse 15? Somebody said, the Lord appeared, yes. Well, the Lord appeared in a pillar of cloud, and the pillar of cloud stood above the door of the tabernacle. Well, that's not just one of those, oh, by the way, here's something that happened while we were there. The point of that is, here is a miracle that confirms that when Moses is appointing this man as the leader, that's the Lord's leader. Does that make sense to you? Moses is not taking on himself, I think I want to appoint a new leader. God's giving his approval of this. So all of Israel knows this is the new leader. Now we'll see him being inaugurated, verse 23. We'll get to that in a moment. What does 16 to 18 say? Exactly. They're going to break the covenant. That when I go rest with my fathers, that when you go rest with the fathers, God is saying to Moses, the people are going to rise up and play the harlots with the foreign god, and they'll forsake me and break my covenant, and my anger will be aroused, and I'll hide my face from them, verse 17. And now notice at the end of verse 17, they're going to reach the point they think God has forsaken them. They're going to say, because our God's not among us. Remember, God had said, I will not leave you nor forsake you. It wasn't God leaving them, they left God. And I will surely hide my face, verse 18, because of all the evil that they have done, and they have turned to their other gods. So here's what's going to happen. They're going to get into the land. They're going to go astray. They're going to go after other gods. It's not a matter. They may. I know they will. And so God says that to Moses. And Moses tells that to the people. And you say, how do you know? Flag verse 28. Moses took all this and told it back to the people. All right. Now then, let's get 19 to 22. What does God tell Moses to do? Write a song for yourselves and teach it to the children of Israel and put it in their mouths that it may be a witness. Underline that. For me against the children of Israel. How could that be a witness? They're going to be taught the song and they're supposed to sing it again and again and again and again. And that should serve as a reminder to them of their God, the greatness of their God, of their apostasy, God's mercy, their rebellion, etc., etc. And so here's the testimony of their own mouth. He's going to mention two witnesses. The next one's going to be mentioned in verse 26. Here's two witnesses against them. One is your song that you sing, and the other's going to be the law. We'll get ready to flag that here in a moment, verse 26. All right, that's going to be a witness. So the song's recorded in chapter 32. Now that gets us down through notice verse 20 though. Let's get the point. What do you see in verse 20? What's going to happen is, you're going to get in the land, not only break their covenant, but what leads them to break their covenant? All right, exactly. They're going to forget about their God. Notice how he words it, that you're going to go into land flowing with milk and honey. In other words, a rich and productive land. That's just an expression describes that. And when you're eaten and are filled and have grown fat, that doesn't mean they literally get fat, but it's like cattle got on the grazing where the grass is luscious, they're going to get fat. And so you're going to go out, you're going to have it better than you've ever had it before, and when you've grown full and are fat, then you forgot your God. Well, that's what he said in Deuteronomy 6 and 12 that was going to happen. Beware when you enter the land and you become full, you'll forget your God. Well, he says here, they will forget God. And when that happens and you break my covenant, then, look at verse 21, when these evils come, they will. The song will testify against them as a witness, for it will not be forgotten in the mouths of the descendants, because I know the inclination. So they're never going to forget this principle I'm telling you to tell them, because they're supposed to sing this song and they're going to sing it again, and their children will sing it, and then their grandchildren will sing it, and their great-grandchildren will sing it. Does that make sense? They're going to remember this. So that's going to serve as a witness to them. Somebody will hear that song and say, oh yeah, God knew a long time ago we were headed this way. So we'll get to the song here in a second as time permits. All right, let's move on to verse 24 to 29. And they were the law was to be put beside the ark. So let's see what he says. He said, take the book of the law after that Moses had written. Moses had completed the writing of the words of the law in a book, and when it was finished, well, the book isn't finished, so I think that's suggesting Moses had completed his part of the law, and then someone else finishes, perhaps Joshua finishes the addendum here on out. But be that as it may, take the book and put it beside the Ark of the Covenant. You say, I thought the law was to be put in the Ark of the Covenant. Well, 1 Kings chapter 8 and verse 9 tells us the tablets of stone, which recorded the Ten Commandments, were in the Ark of the Covenant. This is the scroll of the law. This is the Pentateuch. In other words, the writings of Moses. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and now when Deuteronomy is completed, it's there. And it was to be beside. The word beside doesn't mean in. It means near, from, apart, etc. So it was to be beside that. Now, the reason it was to be put beside it, it would be there, here's your word, as a witness. So every time they go astray, they ought to be able to see the law
right there by the Ark of the Covenant. Not everybody went into the most holy place, but the high priest could remind them of that. They know the law is right there. And the song being sung, there were two witnesses against them in their transgression, in their testimony against their transgression. Does that make good sense to you? All right. Now, let's move on. Let's start with verse 30, which we've already mentioned. He's going to write this song. And so where is the song? Well, that's chapter 32 now, the Song of Moses. All right. So here we have the song, verses 1 to 43. Let's start with it. So let's get the gist of it in the time we have. And this Song of Moses, this is the song that he taught the people here at 120 years old by the direction of God. And the first section of that has to do with proclaiming the greatness of God. Verse 3 and 4 would summarize that, I think. That proclaim the name of the Lord, ascribe greatness to our God. He is the rock. He is his work is perfect. His ways are justice, a God of truth without injustice, righteous and upright is he. So they sing this song about how great God is. Well, if he's that great, then why are you turning to idols? That ought to be a witness against them. All right, here's the second point, verses 5 and 6. What's it about? Summarized at verse 5. They, Israel, have corrupted themselves. As good as God is, as great as God is, as strong as his miracles were, they still went astray. One writer said this. He said, everything in nature obeys the Lord except his people. That's interesting. A.W. Tozer said, no religion has ever been greater than its idea of God. If you've got an idea of God that he's not that great, then your religion's not that great. If you've got the idea that your God is the greatest of all, then maybe your religion is pretty great. I think that's a pretty good point. All right, now let's start at verse 7. So he's made two points in the song. God is great, the people are corrupt, and then 7 to 14 is what? Yes, how he's blessed them. Remember the days of old, consider the years of many generations, and ask your fathers, and they will show you, and ask the elders. In other words, as they sing this song, if you don't remember and you weren't there, then ask those that were older, and they'll tell you the story of how God has blessed his people. For example, look at verse 10. He found him in the desert land and in the wasteland, howling in the wilderness. In other words, Israel is pictured as an abandoned orphan that God took up and protected and kept Israel as the apple of his eye. And as a eagle stirs up the nest and takes care of its young, God took care of his people. So basically, I took you from nothing and made something out of you. That's what I did. And they're reminded of that. Now let's get 15 to 18. Israel, yeah. I want to go back and flag verse 13. Verse 13 talks about how richly blessed. It's just describing how richly blessed they are. But now verse 15, your translation may say Jeshurun. You say, who's Jeshurun? It's the word for righteous. It had reference to Israel. And it's calling Israel Jeshurun. And it's basically a rebuke. Israel was supposed to be righteous. That's not what they were. They grew fat and grew thick. And they scorned and esteemed. They scornfully esteemed the rock of his salvation. They provoked him to jealousy with their foreign gods. In other words, and then notice at the end of verse 18, they've forgotten God who fathered them. The God who made them what they are, they forgot all about him. And so Israel forgot about their God when they got fat. All right. Now let's talk about 19 to 33. 19 to 33, God will take those that have gone astray and treats them as people at the end of verse 20 of no faith. Now here's an interesting quotation. This is not a quotation, let me rephrase it. Here's an interesting text that is quoted elsewhere. And that is, I'll provoke you to jealousy by them that are not a nation, and by a foolish nation will I anger you. Heard that before?
I'll have to look. It's quoted in Hosea is one place, but our familiarity with that is probably not from Hosea or Deuteronomy, but Romans 10. I will provoke you to jealousy by them that are no people, and by a foolish nation will I anger you. It's a reference to God bringing in the Gentiles, prophecy of the Gentiles coming. So some label this as being messianic. It depends on how you use the term messianic. Is it talking about the days of the Messiah? Yes. Is it talking about the Messiah himself? It's not talking about the Messiah himself. So how, if you want to flag those, you do that. But it is messianic in that it talks about the days of the Messiah. It's prophecy of that, Romans chapter 10. So quotes it and uses it that way. But in other words, God's going to punish his people. Now let's get ahead of ourselves. Let's drop on down to verse 30 rather. It is a picture of God selling his people to the enemy. That's part of his punishing them. He sends them away. That even their enemies, verse 31, I think is making the point that even their enemies recognize that Israel had their strength by their God. Not of their own might, but it was by their God they had their strength. They took note of that. The enemies did. Now, verse 32, they reach the point that Israel is a vine that's producing some bad fruit. Fruit likened to Sodom and Gomorrah. Things have gone real south for Israel. Now, this is a prophecy of what's going to take place in the future. So that's part of the song. And this is what they sing from generation to generation, and it serves as a witness against them. Now, 34 to 43, to finish the song, what's it about? God, this is the story of the prophets. This is the story we've seen so far. This was the story of chapter 30. Yes, where he talks about God is a God of vengeance. Look, I will render, verse 41, I will repay those that hate me. I will render vengeance to his adversaries. Part of God's mercy is he brings them back and then he punishes those who were his enemies. And so here's the Chaldeans come and take them in captivity. And then the Chaldeans are overtaken by the Medo-Persians. And then the Medo-Persians are conquered and defeated. And so what was that? Well, that's part of the mercy of God, by bringing a remnant back. So it's a story that we're going to read about in the Kings and the Chronicles and in the Prophets. So this is not true of this group, but if there was somebody present who said, I've never really studied the Kings and the Chronicles and the Prophets, I wonder what it's about, read this song and you've got a flavor of what it's going to be. This is what it's all about. The people went astray, and God sent prophets, and a remnant returned. That's it. And in the middle of that is prophecies of the Messianic age. That's what we have right here. So you got a taste of the prophets right here. All right. Now, let's move on from that song. Now, that song is going to serve as a witness, as we've already mentioned, from generation to generation. And that's one of the last things Moses left. Just as a footnote, this is more about our singing than the study here, but I learned that God uses songs and singing and music to be very effective in teaching a message. Singing is not a time filler. Singing is a way that we emphasize and remind us again and again of God's principles, and we're edified and we're built up. This was to accomplish something. So Moses doesn't have long to live, and one of the last things he's doing is writing a song. That's interesting. All right, let's get 44 to 47. Here's an exhortation to carefully obey. Now, this is part of that sermon again. I think what we just went through about the song and that Moses taught it to the people, and having taught that to the people and having inaugurated Joshua, he teaches them these principles. So what does he say here? First thing. Verse 44, 45, and 46. Yes, set your heart on all the words which I testify to you today, which you shall command your children to be careful to observe all the words of the law. In Judges 2, we're going to read there arose a generation after them, after the days of Joshua, that did not know God. Do you know why that happened? Yeah, every man did what was right in his own eyes. The reason they did that, though,
is because they failed to do what was mentioned right here. They didn't teach it to their children. Psalm 78 makes the same point, by the way. If this generation teaches the next generation, and that generation teaches the next generation, and that generation teaches the next generation, we're all right. Somewhere, when there's a breakdown, then you have a generation that rises up that doesn't know God. They didn't do that, and that's the point. All right, so three things he said here. Set your heart to do all the words, command your children to carefully, and that will prolong your days in the land. That's not a promise of living a long life. That's a promise, you tell me. They'll get to stay in the land. And you won't be driven out as long as you're doing this. When they quit doing this, you're going to be driven out. They didn't do that, so guess what? They were driven out. Now let's get finally, in the last couple of minutes to go, Moses is to die. He doesn't die tonight in tonight's lesson. He dies next week. But we have in 48 to 52, God tells Moses to go up on the mountain, Mount Nebo. If you want to see where Nebo is in the circle right here. You have the Salt Sea, Dead Sea, the Jordan River. They're about to go over, and their first conquest is going to be right here in the middle of that circle at Jericho. And so right where my little arrow is, but he's here at Mount Nebo, and that's where he is to go up, and he's to die, and he's to be gathered to his people, the text says, and die on the mountain. Now, why is that? Verse 51. Because he transgressed and didn't hallow me in the midst of the people of Israel. Then God makes a promise to him. Here's what you will do and here's what you won't do. You can stand on the mountain and you can see the land that I'm about to give them, but you can't go. There are consequences to sin. That had to be a solemn reminder to the people. Our leader is not going with us. Because he transgressed the commandment of God. And yet in spite of that, they still have problems. Practical things. We got about a minute to go. Practical things. Question number 10 that you learn from any of this. All right. Always fear the Lord and keep his commandments. Good point. Learning fear is not a one-time thing if you didn't hear what Drew said. He said more than that, but that was one of the main things he just said. Good point. Let's get one more. Good point. We'll stop right there on that note. Chapters 33, 34, and that will finish up Deuteronomy, and we're ready then to go into Joshua in the next trimester.